Coming up on today's program, news, music, and conversation. Let's get to it. I'm Jerry Kenney. This is WISO Weekend. As always, thanks for sharing your weekend with WISO. Coming up later in the program, a look at what Springfield could look like in 25 years. We'll also talk with WISO's Catherine Mobley about the upcoming May primary and what'll be on your ballot. Up first, in this week's episode of Translucent, Lee Wade speaks with the co-founder of a local grassroots group that's turning support into action for transgender, non-binary, and gender non-conforming people.
Hi, I'm Lee Wade, and you're listening to Translucent, a series that amplifies trans voices, humanizes our community, and creates space for the real everyday conversations that don't make headlines. Right now across the country, trans people are facing a wave of legislation that's making everyday life feel uncertain, and for a lot of people, unsafe. But here in the Miami Valley, there are folks doing the work to make sure no one has to go through that alone. I spoke with Gage Gatlin, co-founder of the Gatlin Dame Group, a local support space for trans, non-binary, and gender non-conforming people. For Gage, this work is personal, and it started with a loss that shook the community.
We got started, it was actually 10 years ago, when Lila Alcorn unalived herself when she was being horribly bullied and put through conversion therapy when she was just 17 years old. And her last words to us before she did was fix society. Basically, what we've been doing ever since is trying to live by that.
The Gatlin Dame Group meets regularly, creating space for people who are just now figuring out who they are and need somewhere to land.
The Gatlin Dame Group is a way to offer support, education, awareness, and get people on board to understand about transgender people and also to help support transgender people when they're first coming out, mostly to be around other trans people. They can come to support group and know that they're not alone in the world, be around other non-binary people and understand that they're not the only one.
And that sense of being alone, it can change everything.
Every single month, we see new people come into group and then they leave group with a smile on their face. They come back to group again and again. They are starting to dress in their preferred gender. You see their gender affirmed, and we see these people grow and blossom into who they are. It makes me proud to know that we have a little bit of something to do with these people being happy and being able to succeed in life.
Over time, those same people come back, not just for support, but to give it. In a moment like this, support can't stop at the support group.
If you don't want to be in the spotlight, what you can do is you can write your representatives. Tell them that you are against these anti-trans bills that are going through.
And even with everything going on, Gage says hope is still here.
You know, my fellow humans give me hope. I feel like if we stick together, you know, and we help each other through this, we can make it through it.
If you're in the Miami Valley and looking for a community, you can find more about the Gatlin Dame Group at gatlindamegroup.org. And if you're listening and you're feeling alone, just know you have a community behind you. I'm Lee Wade, and thank you for listening to Translucent.
Translucent is supported by the Ruby Girls Foundation and Square One Salon and Spa, and produced right here at the Eichelberger Center for Community Voices at WYSO. Early voting for the 2026 May primary is underway across Ohio. On the ballot are several state and judicial races, as well as school and public safety levies. I spoke with WISO's political reporter, Catherine Mobley, who highlights some of the local issues voters will face when they head to the polls. Let's start by talking about U.S. Representative Mike Turner, who is running again to represent the 10th District. Does he have any challengers?
On the May primary ballot, six Democrats are vying to be the one to challenge Mike Turner in November. Turner has served in the U.S. Congress since 2003. After redistricting, he's represented Ohio's 10th congressional district for more than 13 years. Here are the Democratic challengers. Janice Beckett, a retired attorney with years of contract experience working with the U.S. Air Force and chief of labor law at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. David Esrati. He owns Next Wave Marketing. He's a local activist and a blogger. He's run for several political offices. This will be Esrati's fourth attempt to win the 10th district seat. Manuel Fogey works in the Hamilton County Common Pleas Court as a drug court docket administrator. Jan Kinner is a retired U.S. Air Force colonel and volunteers in the community. Christina Knickerbocker is a U.S. Air Force veteran and a nurse practitioner at the Ohio State University Wexner Medical Center. This is her first entrance into politics. And finally, Tony Pombo. He's an IT systems administrator for Edict Systems in Beaver Creek. He first ran for the 10th district seat in the 2024 primary. The 10th congressional district includes all of Montgomery and Greene counties, as well as Northeast Butler County, including Middletown.
Okay, so let's shift to local races. There are school levies on the ballot. What are some of those?
In Montgomery County, Kettering City Schools has a 10-year plan called Future Ready Facilities. The district has about a dozen schools ranging between 60 and 70 years old. Thus, many of them need to be replaced. Part one of the plan, which is on the May ballot, is a $5.93 million bond issue for new construction, improvements, renovations to the school facilities. It would generate $222 million over 37 years. Costing the owner of a $100,000 property about $210 in additional taxes. Part two of this plan is a $2.67 million bond issue, and it would kick in several years from now. While many Kettering residents are longtime supporters of the school district, some are opposing this bond issue, saying they're being overtaxed. In Greene County, Jefferson Township local schools have an annual income tax of 1.25% on the earned income for current expenses. This is a continuing tax. Northridge Local School District has an additional $2.2 million levy for general permanent improvements. In Warren County, Franklin City School District want a 1% annual income tax to cover expenses. It would last for 10 years. In Butler County, Fairfield City School District wants to continue a 1.25% income tax to cover maintenance and other expenses.
All right, we'll find out where those come down. Catherine, what are some of the other ballot issues voters will face?
Jerry, way north of us in Logan County, voters will see a new tax levy on the ballot. It'll support programs and services for individuals with developmental disabilities. It's a $2.75 million. That would shake out to about $96 a year for the owner of a $100,000 property. It will annually generate an estimated $6 million. If approved, this levy would run for 5 years.
And what about public safety issues on the ballot?
There are several. In Clay Township, and that's the northern part of Montgomery County, they have a $2.5 million fire and EMS levy on the May ballot. Now, three small fire departments support this rural community of only about 8,800 people. Each will get a portion of the $800,000 this levy would generate annually if the levy is approved. Supporters say this measure is vital to support residents living in the northern part of the township. If passed, it would cost the owner of a $100,000 property an additional $88 per year. Moving over to Butler Township, voters will consider a $2.5 million levy for police and a $2.5 million levy for fire and EMS. Township leaders say call volumes and operating expenses have continued to increase for both departments, and they both need the additional funds to maintain current public safety, staffing, and for daily operations and stabilization. Each levy is estimated to generate more than $800,000 a year. In Harrison Township, voters will consider a $3.5 million police levy. Harrison Township contracts with Montgomery County Sheriff's Office for law enforcement services. The levy would generate about $1.2 million per year to help pay for those services. If this levy passes, it will cost the owner of a $100,000 home about $122 additional tax dollars per year. But Jerry, the most important thing is anyone who votes using an absentee ballot, they have to make sure that ballot is turned into their county's main Board of Election office by May 5th, before the polls close. Otherwise, their votes will not be counted.
All right, Catherine, thanks so much for the update.
Happy voting.
And Catherine will be back later in the program with a report on the city of Beaver Creek's latest attempt to install an income tax. This week, Place Position visited the WISO studios to talk about their new album with music director and Kaleidoscope host Juliet Fromholt. Here's part of that conversation.
Place Position live here on Kaleidoscope on YSO and Novaphonic. Welcome, y'all.
Hello.
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 Thanks for having us.
Hi, hello.
Glad to have y'all here. When I read about this album, I was like, wow, Daryl and Andy and Gwen and, you know, Tim with Sweet Cheetah, all of these people, it feels like you had the community kind of surrounding you on this.
Yeah, definitely all of the people you just named along the way were pushing us to, at various points, sometimes being nice about it and sometimes being like, dudes, just do the thing.
Yeah.
Like, just yeah. Put the album out. Why are you doing this?
And to that point, I'm pretty sure Gwen called us out on air on your station.
Yeah, actually, yes.
I'm pretty sure that happened.
I believe that happened. Well, it is a fine balance, right? Like, you want to get it out there. You want people to hear it. You've got, you know, your friends and your community clamoring for it. But you also want to, you know, do it the way you want to do it. How do you kind of balance out the excitement of everybody and your own anticipation with also like running that risk of being too precious with it and holding on to it too long?
Man, I don't,
that's pretty deep.
That's a good question.
I don't know that we are handling, I forget how you phrased that question, but I'm not sure. We're kind of all, I think, oscillating between excitement. People genuinely like it. I do want to say, people really like the album. The reception's been really great. People have been very kind about it. Strangers, complete strangers. Like, we've gotten reviews from publications that we wouldn't have. It's not like we know people at these places. So
yeah,
That's eased the pain. I'm the one that, if you can't tell, I'm the one that always wants to belabor stuff and be too precious about it.
And I'm the one that's like, let's go.
Yeah, it's Chip's fault.
It's my fault. I was like, we should have done this yesterday.
Well, I feel like in a group you need, you know, both ends of that kind of spectrum.
And we try to be democratic about it. I really prefer, in this band with three of us, we're all 33 and a third, mm-hmm. just like long plays. Just like records, we're all 33 and a third vote. So, and that's the way you got to do it, because that's how you amalgamate this new thing out of where you're all coming from and what you've all got going on. And
yeah,
it's just better that way. And to me,
the album is out now. It's called Went Silent. Folks can pick it up on Bandcamp, support your artists. But folks can also celebrate with you in person at Blind Bob's on May 9th. Tell us about this show.
I believe Jesse was pretty instrumental in putting this together. We have some great friends joining us for the show. Our friends Golden Aura, Black Spot, and No Balance are also playing. And that's going to be a really good time.
Doors at 8, music at 9.
Yeah. And we'll have the LP for sale. Come get it.
We are also, on that note, legitimately running out of it. We didn't order an especially large amount of copies because, again, we're all dads. So it's kind of a thing there. But it would be cool to get them to people that would like this.
And it's out on vinyl too, right?
That's what, yes. I was.
Yeah, that's yeah.
Josh, tell them about how cool the vinyl is.
The vinyl looks amazing. It sounds great, and we have
180 grams.
It's 180 gram.
Yes.
Wonderful packaging. Some great stickers that Chip made.
Excellent art. Excellent insert in there. A lot of care went yeah. into the package.
And we have under 30 copies just for the show. So.
Oh, wow. So get them while you can.
Get them while you can. Yes.
Awesome.
Yeah.
You've had a big year so far. Like, typically this time of year, I'm like, so what does the rest of the year look like? But, like, you guys have, like, done the things. You know, you've put an album out. You've got the release show coming up. But what would you like the rest of the year to look like? Are you guys already writing new material, hoping to do more live shows?
TBD, we work really slowly, and I don't know that that'll change. We have some show irons in the fire for later in the year, but nothing that we can really...
Yeah.
I get, like, there's definitely nothing set enough to talk about, other than the next time you can see us will probably be fall, besides this May 9th show.
Yeah, late summer, fall, we're working some things out, so...
Well, if folks want to keep tabs on those mystery fall dates and other stuff to come, where should they connect with y'all?
Bandcamp or Instagram. We begrudgingly have an Instagram because apparently you just can't be a band without some kind of social media. And I don't know what the calculations on which one is the best worst one or worst best one, but that we landed on Instagram. But I think it's like place, position, Dayton. Certainly, if you type place, position, Dayton into the search, it'll come up.
We've got place, position in the house. Their new album is called Went Silent. It is available now where you get your music. But you will want to get your hands on a physical copy of the vinyl at the release show on May 9th at Blind Bob's. Before we send you off to put this one in your calendar, however, I think it's time for some more live music. What do you guys say?
Let's do it. I guess.
Check out more studio sessions online at wyso.org. I'm Jerry Kenny. This is WISO Weekend. So what will Springfield look like 25 years from now? That's the goal of Springfield 2051, a project that uses input from the community to try and answer that question. Heading the effort is the research and consulting firm Future IQ. WISO's Mike Frazier spoke with the firm's CEO, David Burrell, about how the project is going so far.
Oh, I think it's going great. We've had about 9 months of really strong community engagement, and we've had over 2,000 people weigh in on what they see for the future of Springfield. It's been this really fascinating discussion where we've been asking people about what direction they want the community to go, what's their appetite for change, what do they think are the big focus areas going forward.
Have you done community surveys to find out what the residents of Springfield are looking for?
Yeah, so this the community engagement has been a really important focus of this. The steering committee has been really strong on wanting to make sure that there's great outreach and that people who are, you know, stakeholders in the future get a chance to weigh in on it. So we've had both in-person and virtual surveys. So we had over 1,500 responses to the survey, and these are really high-quality data points. I mean, that survey was about 15 or 20 minutes to complete. It was qualitative, quantitative responses, so open-ended and numeric responses. And we know a lot about those people, you know, in terms of which neighborhood they live in, what's their age profile and so on. So it's really rich data that tells us a lot about what people are thinking and their sentiment for change and sentiment about the future. But we've also had about 800 people attend in-person sessions. So we've had over 50 what we call listening sessions, where we went around to high schools and neighborhoods and businesses and different organizations and had these hour or 2 hour long sessions where we got people to weigh in on a number of key questions. So this has been a really strong community outreach and engagement exercise. What we started to see is actually a very large portion of the community is pretty excited about what they're seeing happening. And they've got a high level of satisfaction about living in the community. And they feel pretty good about how the community is starting to come together. And this became really the dominant sort of component of the survey responses. And the sort of things that people talked about is that they saw the action in downtown. They saw the revitalization that's occurring there. They were really excited about that. But they also saw very intentional efforts to start to bring the community together around important topics.
What phase in the Springfield 2051 campaign are you in now, and what's next?
The next big phase in the project, which will run for 6 months or so, is starting to say, well, if we've identified what we think our vision is and what the key building blocks of that vision are, what are the actions we need to be taking over the next 1, 2, 5, 10 years that will pivot our trajectory towards that preferred future? So we're going to go back out to the community for another several months, seek input from people about what ideas they've got for action areas. We'll gather those and then do some prioritization of those with the community. And then that'll lay down the basis of this roadmap, which should be kind of, think of it as a master plan that the community has crafted itself about, here's where we want to go, here's what we think we need to work on to get there, and here's who's going to lead those initiatives.
I was about to ask you if the community still has an opportunity for input, and it sounds like there are more opportunities coming up.
Oh, absolutely, and that's part of that commitment to broad community engagement. We want the community to feel like they own this at every step.
What did the Haitian community tell you, or how involved were they in community input regarding Springfield 2051?
There are a number of people who are on the steering committee who do have very deep outreach into that community, people who are from the faith community and so on. They sit on our advisory group, and they bring a lot of that information. So part of what we've tried to do is to structure the advisory group and the steering committee that it reaches into all these networks in the community. And while some of those networks, the people individually may feel reluctant to participate, we are certainly getting their perspective coming into the process. But I think that's just good, organic, community-building, community-fabric work. So we feel confident that we have an understanding of the issues that are on people's minds.
For people who may be looking for a place to live or to work or to move their business into, when they say, why Springfield, what would you tell them?
People do see Springfield being a uniquely different community, and it has a very distinct flavor. And I think part of that is driven by the history. I mean, Springfield has had its ups and downs over time, but it has been an incredibly significant center for industry and commerce and innovation in this country in its lifetime. But the other part, too, that people have talked about is that Springfield is like this perfect size. You know, it's big enough to have a lot of amenities like great hospitals and things like that, but it's also small enough where you can make a home for yourself and you can connect into the system and make a difference.
That was Future IQ CEO David Burrell speaking with WISO's Mike Frazier about the Springfield 2051 project. And moving on to another city, Beaver Creek residents have rejected an earned income tax 5 times since 1984. But WISO's Catherine Mobley is back to report the city is trying again, aiming to put this measure on the November ballot.
According to the city's finance director, in 2024, Beaver Creek's revenue was a little more than $53 million. About $30 million came from property taxes. During last month's city council meeting, council member Pete Bales said having only property taxes as the city's primary revenue source is not sustainable. He supports a 1% earned income tax to give the city a more diverse revenue source.
We are restructuring the way our revenue is to be more fair, more balanced, and more sustainable. This approach provides real relief to homeowners. It protects our seniors whose retirement income is not subject to income tax, and importantly, a significant portion of that income tax would be paid by non-residents who work here and use our infrastructure every day.
City staff are now creating the ordinance language that Beaver Creek voters may see on the November 2026 ballot. It would directly affect 23,000 non-residents who work in Beaver Creek and about 3,000 who work and live in the city. A Miami University study estimates if 2 years ago, the city had an earned income tax, it would have collected more than $19 million. The money would go into the city's general fund to cover the cost of various infrastructure projects, purchase equipment, and add needed staff. But longtime resident Harold Lewis doesn't like the idea of city leaders having access to these dollars. He wants a written guarantee requiring a citizen's vote before any changes can be made to the amount of an earned income tax.
What's going to keep the state from coming out and saying, hey, city council, you can increase the earnings tax, say 0.5%. I want to see something in there that prohibits that.
However, City Attorney Josh Lounsbury says Beaver Creek City Charter already provides this protection.
State law says that any time that a city wants an income tax greater than 1%, so we wanted to raise the income tax by 0.1%, that would require voter approval. Even if the state law changed, the city's charter would require us to go back to the citizens for any increase.
With the proposed earned income tax, several types of incomes would be exempt, including pensions, 401ks, IRAs, Social Security, active duty military pay, qualifying military spouse income, child support, and unemployment compensation. Beaver Creek has a population of almost 50,000. Under this proposal, city residents who already pay at least 1% municipal income tax to another city will not pay anything to the city of Beaver Creek. However, if the community where they work has no income tax or a rate less than 1%, they would pay the difference up to 1% to Beaver Creek. Debbie Albarico lives in Beaver Creek and supports this levy. She urges all residents to trust the city council members they voted into office.
The city council has committees that look at the budget. They scrutinize the budget. That's still going to go on. That's still going to happen. You know, these city council people are voted in. They're elected officials. So why don't we trust them? If you don't like what they're doing, you vote them out when they're up for election. You don't not pass a levy or an income tax.
Additionally, city leaders say they will permanently eliminate 9.5% of the property taxes it currently collects, a revenue loss of about $15 million. This will translate into an annual savings of almost $233 for the owner of a $100,000 property. On April 27th, Beaver Creek City Council members will vote whether or not to put this issue on the November 2026 ballot. If voters accept an earned income tax, it would go into effect July 1st, 2027. Reporting for WYSO News, I'm Catherine Mobley.
You can find more of Catherine's reporting on our website at wyso.org.
This is Bird Note. This staccato call tells us there's a yellow-billed cuckoo nearby. One of two species of cuckoos in the woodlands of North America, the yellow-billed lives in broadleaf forests throughout the east and riparian stands in the southwest. They were common breeding birds in the Pacific Northwest as late as the 1920s, but then they disappeared. Ornithologists still don't know why. The black-billed cuckoo is a more northerly species living in dense woodland, even conifer forests. Cuckoos perch quietly and scan their surroundings for food. Hairy tent caterpillars, shunned by most birds, are often on their meal ticket. So, if you have an infestation of tent caterpillars, you might see one of these slender brown and white birds with long white-spotted tails. The cuckoo plucks a caterpillar from its tent and manipulates it back and forth in its bill, taking off many of the bothersome hairs. But some of them remain, and cuckoo stomachs are sometimes lined with these hairs. When the hairs are dense enough to prevent digestion, the entire stomach lining is cast off and regurgitated. Nature finds surprising ways to deal with problems. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
Bird Note, putting a wrap on this week's edition of WYSO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO, or you could be listening to the podcast. Please download and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Our theme music is Another Beautiful Day in Paradise by Magnolia Boldhead. I'm Jerry Kenny. We've got more news, conversations, and music for you next weekend. Please join us then.